trunks, branches, leaves.
Branches, leaves.
Buds and fruits and flowers in the breeze.
1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE-4U. Gary starts us off this segment from Scottsdale and wants to talk pecan trees. Good morning, sir.
Happy Saturday morning. I'm out here in the backyard actually digging, moving some soil. And one of the things I'm doing is digging a hole for a shade tree. We've got a two-story house, and really the bulk of the two-storiness is on the western exposure. So I want to plant a shade tree or two. I've got only about 25 feet or so between the edge of my house and my six-foot block wall. And like I said, it's two-story, so I'm looking for a kind of a vertical growth habit. Maybe so that's the width of the space, and then lengthwise it's probably 40 feet, the other direction. So maybe two trees in there. I've got some other plants. As a hobby, I grow some fruit trees and vegetables and whatnot like that. So I'm thinking pecan tree, John. So I'd like to get your take on that. I'm not absolutely married to the notion of that tree or having a fruit or nut tree in there for that space. I could be talked out of it if there's something that the benefits of shade and shape and things like that, you think is a better choice. But I'd like to get your take on the pecan tree. And then if a pecan tree, I hear people lose a lot of them. Is there anything particular, it's got like a tap root or something like that? So that's where I'm at.
Yeah, pecans are awesome when they're established and growing in your yard. They can have some problems this time of year with aphids dropping some honeydew in your yard. But they're awesome trees once they get established, but they're thirsty. They require water. And sometimes people don't realize that they're not going to be able to just get by on a typical watering schedule. Or you just have to be sure you water to the full depth of the root zone, the root ball, every time you water. And then as the tree, of course, gets larger, you need to continue meeting that need for the increased size of the root system. Yes, they do develop a taproot, and in good, well flocculated, well drained soil in an orchard setting, they're going to have the ability to put down a root quite deeply. Unfortunately, in our some of our urban landscapes, in a yard like yours, you may not have that type of soil structure and texture that would support a tree like a pecan. So keep that in mind, that you need to have a pretty well-drained soil that's going to allow those roots to go deep. Again, containerized trees may not even have a well-developed root tap root, I'm not sure I would buy anything other than a field-grown pecan tree. You'd have to kind of try to source one that has rather than buy a smaller tree that may not have been grown with allowing for that taproot development. But no, it's a great tree. Pecans grow taller than they do. They grow wide. So for a two-story application like you're looking for, it's a good choice from that standpoint. And that 40-foot length of space would probably allow for two to be planted quite safely. Also, I'd try to split the distance between your house and the block wall. That 25 feet, I'd try to put the tree right in the middle. Whatever you decide to plant, you want to give it as much rooting space as you can without those roots hitting the block wall and possibly breaking up the wall over time. So, yeah, give those roots as much space as you can.
Gotcha. Are there varieties of pecan trees that I'm more
interested
in?
That's not my area of expertise. You know, I would contact your local nursery and call John Harper and Jay Harper and see. He could certainly steer you in the right direction.
Okay, absolutely. I know you guys were going to talk about compost. When you get there, I've looked on a couple of Facebook groups, and there's seems like a raging controversy about the depth of compost and the mulch around a tree. There's one camp that's like 6 inches or less, and the other camp is a foot or more. And I know there's some talk about the amount of oxygen they get, et cetera, et cetera. So when you get there and have that conversation, touch on that, would you?
I will. I appreciate
All right.
the call.
Thank you, guys.
You bet. Take care.
Greg, we appreciate the call. I do have a couple additional points for you. We had a specialist in, oh gosh, I'm going to say this has been 3 or 4 years ago. Pecan trees need 10 gallons a day per year of their life. So by the time that tree's 10 years old, it needs 100 gallons a day. Now, you don't water it every day because you still need to let the roots dry out. So if you're watering once a week at 10 years, that needs 1,000 gallons when you go to water it. So that's a very robust, thirsty tree. And you were talking about people losing them. It's because they don't realize the amount of water it takes.
But where we've seen the pecans do the best in my 30 years in the industry has been in irrigated lots or in orchard settings. Mm-hmm. There's several pecan orchards in the East Valley that were sold to developers, and they've built in and around those established pecan trees. But wherever I see a really mature pecan in town, it's usually in some of those areas where you have irrigation.
L.E. Cook out of California is one of the premier grafters that are used here in Arizona, and their variety that works best is the Western Shelly pecan. And you can get those at specialty local nurseries, usually at graft time, early spring. So if you're looking for a pecan, there's a little bit.
Yeah, the different varieties will have different characteristics, the shell thickness on the pecan itself, the size of the pecans, and ask your local grower to steer you in the right direction from that standpoint. But yeah, a well-established pecan is such a blessing to have those pecans dropping on the ground about this time of year. And we have some friends of ours, Steve Preeb and Donna DeFrancesco, have a wonderful couple of big pecan trees in their yard, and they treated us to some of their harvest a few years ago. And they had several 5-gallon buckets of those pecans in their garage, and it's really nice to have.
You know, they took, when they built their home, leaves from that pecan tree and embedded them into the countertop using a process called
flat-tooing. That. You're right. They've got a couple of those leaves embedded in that concrete countertop. Getting to the question of compost, can we talk about that now?
Let's get to compost.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I highly recommend putting down as little compost as you can around the trees for various reasons. One, if the compost is too thick, it can cap the oxygen to the soil. The oxygen, as we talked about in prior years, the soil needs oxygen, and the roots require oxygen for cell metabolism to take place. So putting in any kind of soil, even if it's a compost, above the native soil prevents oxygen from getting down into the root system, and for the roots also to be releasing carbon dioxide and methane gas through the that gas exchange has to take place, and you don't want to be capping that by putting too much soil above the native soil. We also don't want the compost to be up against the trunk of the trees, because it can wick the moisture up against the trunk of the trees and set up conditions for fungal pathogens to start attacking the trunk tissue. So we recommend, 2 inches, maybe 3 inches of a finished compost, never more than that. If it's a very fine textured compost, even 1 or 2 inches, maybe all you'd want. If you have a very heavy textured compost with big chunks in it, and we call that more flocculated and broken up, so oxygen is can penetrate through it more easily. Of course, you can put a thicker layer in. You can put 4 to 6 inches in. But there's a big problem with mulch being pushed up against the trunks of trees. We call them mulch volcanoes. We don't see it so much here out in the West, but it's very common in the Midwest and the East, where a lot of mulch is pushed up right up against the trunk. It's caused more trouble with trees. Root activity moves up into those areas. As I said, fungal pathogens get active because that mulch wicks the moisture up against the trunk like a contact explosive, and it just destroys the trunk of the tree. And once that happens, the trees will decline. So keep the mulch away from the base of the trees and only as much as you need to provide a nice, 2 or 3 inch cushion. The benefits of compost are amazing. It encourages some nitrogen cycling. If we've taken all the leaf litter away, of course, as the compost is breaking down, it's releasing nutrients back into the soil, vitamins back into the soil, that in turn improves the soil microbiology. It also insulates the soil. It moderates the temperature of the soil. In the summer, it keeps it cooler. In the winter, it keeps it warmer. So it really provides a wonderful blanket, so to speak, over the soil, giving the rooting environment the optimum conditions for that root development. It also reduces water loss. So whatever your irrigation we're putting to the plants, that layer of mulch is going to hold it in the soil longer and won't lose it to evaporation. Also, compost controls dust. It controls weeds. Finally, it cures the common cold. It does just about everything. We love compost. I think in some ways it's better than throwing a bunch of chemicals at our trees. Through fertilizer is essentially chemicals. And whether they're synthetic, whether they're organic, it's still putting chemicals into the soil. Most of those are salt-based. Well, when you put a nice compost, a nice sweet finished compost over the soil, you're encouraging that nitrogen cycling very organically and naturally. And it helps to minimize the need to put down as much fertilizer. So compost is wonderful, whether you make your own or whether you go purchase it. And there are several good sources. Western Organics is a great source. And also Sing Farms out in the East Scottsdale area have some really good quality compost. So you can go buy it in bulk, go bring a pickup truck and grab some, or get a few bags and bring it back to your yards and spread it around the base of all of your trees, and they will love you for it. If you want to create your own compost, it's really easy to do. As someone has said, compost happens. And if you collect your fall leaves and your kitchen scraps, I even clean out my gutters and take the sludge and the grunge from my gutters, because that's a bunch of leaf matter that's already partially broken down. So it's a great addition. It's like a yeast in bread. It's a starter for your compost pile because it's already started to break down. It's already bacteria has started to break down some of the plant material. Throw that into your compost pile. Take your plant clippings. You essentially want a blend of both both brown and green materials. You want your nice green leaf material, some of your lettuce, some of your kitchen scraps, but then you also want brown material. That is your carbon materials in your yard, some of your dried leaves, pine needles. Put those into the compost mix with an even mixture, and all you need to do is add water and occasionally toss the pile, turn it over from time to time, and as I said, compost happens, and you'll be in about 90 days, a typical 90-day process, you will have, and sometimes even shorter time period in the summer, you'll have what becomes a wonderful a compost material that you can now use either as a planting medium to plant some of your new plants, or you can use it as we were just talking about, as a surface compost mulch over the tops of your trees.
We'll wrap up with our talking points for September right after this, along with Sheila, wants to talk about plum trees right here at Rosie on the House.